So that isn't actually the way I think of it. What I think of is that what I'm actually trying to capture with the first bullet there is that within a slice, there will be some software that's running, right? Okay. And when I say application layer, basically what I'm talking about there is any information that the slice will want to capture about what's going on in that slice itself. So when I write software, I very frequently put in state print, you know, various sorts of statements that allow me to catalog what's going on in the piece of software that I've written. And that's what I'm talking about right here. Okay? So this is the behavior within the slice that's only visible within the slice. Well, they have total control over what happens in their slice, okay. Right? So the answer is absolutely they'll be able to customize it with whatever they want to do. So they're at the highest level, there will be some need to be able to take what's produced by the slice and analyze it, archive it, and potentially reuse it at some point. Okay, so that's the sort of the highest level for me for measurement. What's happening that's totally within the slice. And that's frankly not sort of broadly visible, right? It's only visible within the slice. So that's what the first bullet is. The second bullet then is about where you have, I think of it as a node. Slices run on nodes. A node might be an end host, it might be a router, it might be some other device, okay? So the sort of canonical examples, at least for today, of information that's produced by nodes are things like MIBS, MIB information, or syslog information, right? So this would be information that would be representative of all of the slices that are running on that particular node, okay? So things like CPU utilization, memory utilization, backplane utilization, the interface statistics, those would be examples of information that would be available from MIBS, from SNMP, or syslog information. You know, the system is crashing or going down at some point. There's been some update. This is the information, again, generally about a specific node.
Now, would the application writer be able to customize what is captured about the node?
Well, what I'm saying is that in the taxonomy that I'm envisioning, they wouldn't have to. So in other words, that information would be captured by the measurement infrastructure. So the first bullet is the only information that the measurement infrastructure sort of has the least visibility into. But nevertheless, a measurement infrastructure should support the sort of the export and archival of what's going on in a slice, okay? When we move to the node level, there are, I would contend, experiments in which you would want to know what's going on the node itself while your slice is running, right? So for example, if I suddenly experienced poor performance by my slice, I could try to do a forensic evaluation of that by potentially looking at whether or not the CPU utilization spiked at that point in time, or whether or not there was some event that was captured in syslog that corresponded to my bad performance, something like that, okay? So we want to be able to capture both of those characteristics within slice and then within node in some measurement infrastructure, okay? The third is the link level behavior, okay? So this is, the best way to think about this is really sort of packets or frames on a wire where you might have multiple nodes that are contributing to that, okay? So sort of a canonical example is monitoring a link using a utility like TCP dump. And in fact, it is this third notion, monitoring link behavior, which is the focus of what we're doing with measurement right now. And what I'll eventually talk about with respect to our architecture is how it is extensible to all four of these, but our initial focus is really on gathering packet level information on links using nodes that are broadly distributed. And I'll talk more about that in a few minutes. And finally, the last layer of information in terms of what to measure, I think about our sort of aggregates of links or path information, all right? So this would be characteristics of flows that traverse multiple nodes and links through a network. All right, now the one thing that I've left out of here that we had talked about sort of in prior years about measurement and instrumentation is anything that's really happening below layer two, so any of the physical layer monitoring. I could have put a bullet for that up here, but we don't really know how to do that very well, and I'm if anyone's wondering, I'm sort of thinking that that's kind of out of scope right now. So, you know, whether or not we're monitoring things like dispersion rates on optical links or what's happening on the transceivers, while it could be incorporated in this framework, and yeah, I guess that'll be talked about next. We're staying above that.
About your taxonomy, I completely agree with the way you have dialed down to the physical layer. But were you at Dave Clark's presentation this morning?
Most of it.
Most of it, okay. He mentioned something like, don't do packet level monitoring anymore. Assume that there are these, I don't know if this is the place to discuss this, but
yeah.
just to throw it out there, let's say all network nodes are not capable of providing MIBs or syslogs. Let's say they are equipped with a bunch of sensors sometimes, and
sure.
Then they just, what should we do about that? I mean, should we address that a little bit at this point so that we will be ready for the next generation Genie?
So I mean, this is something, again, that's treated in the original Genie instrumentation and measurement systems document, but I would push back on Dave, and I would say that's a great vision to have things like flexible frame representations and those kinds of things. In the next year, we're not going to have anything like that. So we have to sort of balance this practical versus the sort of the vision. And there isn't anything really about what we're doing in terms of how we're approaching developing measurement systems that precludes some kind of flexible frame format. Ultimately, what you need is you need an instrumentation, a sensor that has the ability to understand what those formats are. And beyond that, everything about what I'm going to talk about is still the same. Okay? Okay, so how to measure, to me, I break down the how to measure into sort of two sub-problems. The first is how to actually gather the data, whether it be on node link or path, and I'm excluding that within slice data gathering for the purpose of conversation, but at some level we could certainly connect a repository pipe to a particular slice so that the slice can pass that information to a repository. So with respect to this how to gather data, we break it down into a couple of different areas, the first being the ability to specify that measurements are connected to a particular experiment. So this relates directly to how users indicate what pieces of data they want to gather, where in the infrastructure they want to gather that data, and when, over what period of time, they want to do the data gathering. The second component is the instrumentation component. This is what I was just talking about. These are the actual devices, the sensors that are deployed within the network that allow data to be gathered. And there can sort of be different realizations of those sensors, whether they be something that has to have the information or the ability to sort of flexibly understand different frames or packet formats, or also something that has the ability to query a device in the case of node monitoring so that information from MIBs and things like syslogs could potentially be gathered. The third component of how to gather data deals specifically with the sort of the plumbing for measurement, meaning the protocols that are required to specify and instantiate a particular measurement specification onto this measurement plane that we're going to be building with respect to deployed instrumentation, and also with respect to the storage systems that are required to aggregate and archive the data. And this issue of how to gather data is the primary focus of our team, meaning the focus that we're pretty much spending 100% of our time on over the next 18 months. So the second sub-problem then is the recognition that simply gathering data is often incomplete. All right, it's not sufficient in terms of really enabling this broad set of experiments. So we need to bridge the gap between data gathering and really facilitating experiments. And there have been a number of people who have talked about the problems of effective measurement in the past. So I'd point you to Vern's paper from IMC 2004 on sound measurement practices. But some of the examples of issues that we need to deal with in order to really bridge this gap are policy enforcement issues, namely, everyone needs to recognize that there are going to be restrictions as you move down in terms of that taxonomy about what data is actually visible to individual researchers conducting their experiments. And we have to be able to respect that and enforce that within the infrastructure. Second issue is the issue of documentation and data cataloging, so that there are built-in mechanisms to enable this basically labeling of data sets so that researchers understand and have a very explicit mechanism for retrieving and analyzing the data that they collect. And then finally, as I said earlier, actually a repository of tools that enable repeatable analysis, consistent analysis, and visualization. So these issues are really going to be our secondary focus once we get the initial infrastructure built. So diving down into our systems design, this is sort of the conceptual design. We're part of the Protogenie cluster, so we'll assume that Protogenie is going to be used to actually specify experiments, and we will extend the Protogenie capability to include a set of interfaces that enable measurements to be specified. The specified measurements will be pushed down to what we're calling the GEMS aggregate manager. This is basically a system or set of systems that retains all of the information about what's available in terms of instrumentation within the Genie infrastructure, and also which experiments have actually been specified to take advantage of that instrumentation. So developing this aggregate manager is one of our important focuses, and by virtue of the fact that we're breaking out the interface from the aggregate manager, this is how we're going to have the ability, hopefully, to flexibly and easily move between control frameworks once we get the system actually built. Okay, so this is sort of key conceptually. Does everybody sort of, go ahead, Henry.
One is, I presume the implementation plane is going to have its own separate processors running, right?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
What kind of overhead, I mean, I guess somewhere down the road you have to set the threshold, how much bandwidth and what's the overhead?
Yeah, exactly, right. So given this sort of conceptual design, there are two sort of important components that we have to build, one being the actual instrumentation. And given the fact that our focus is on the link level, we're going to be developing these measurement hosts that will basically tap a link and have two other interfaces. The link tap will speak specifically to your question, which is basically the capability to gather information with high accuracy, high precision, and high confidence. And that's basically going to be up to the GPO and the set of researchers who are using, what do we want there? And there's a very nice direct sort of cost-benefit, I think, analysis that can be done there. I mean, these high-performance cards, for gigabit links are running on the order of $4,000, and for 10 gigabit links are running on the order of about $16,000. So we, as a community, can decide how much money we want to spend on this and how broadly we want to deploy it. The measurement host itself, while it seems like in this diagram, might be fairly straightforward, there are certainly complications with developing this, in particular with the fact that we are not going to be able to have individual measurement hosts archive data for a large number of researchers, right? So, I mean, you can do the math. If we're monitoring a gigabit link, how much disk space you would have to be able to maintain full packet capture for, you know, hundreds of experiments over a long period of time, not feasible. So what we actually envision for this measurement host is basically a leaky bucket, where we're pulling packets down from using this system. We have some amount of local storage, but then we're basically streaming the information to some high-capacity storage system that will end up being the archive for the individual experiments. Okay, so this is the instrumentation component. Please. So, right, so the all of the configuration of the instrumentation is done by the aggregate manager. So when an experimenter defines an experiment, that goes to the aggregate manager, which then translates that configuration into what's most easily thought of as essentially a set of filters that will get deployed onto the instruments. Okay. Then the second component, have a safe trip, Mark, that we're developing are the protocols that are needed to facilitate the instantiation of experiments on the instruments and the transmission of data between the instruments and some storage systems. So there are really sort of three levels here then, what the users specify, the control flow as a result of user specification, and then at the lowest level, the data flow, which is specific to then that instrumentation plane. Okay, so we've actually begun the process of developing very early prototypes of the system. We have actually the ability to, we have data structures that have been mocked up. We have a Protogeni extension that one of the students has built, and we have the ability to create a very simple specification based on this notion of packet or frame monitoring that can be passed to an aggregate manager, and then the aggregate manager can essentially pass on the filters to another device. It's all being run locally right now, but by the time of the next Genie Engineering Conference, we'll be able to demonstrate this. All right, so with respect to where we are and where we're going, we have an early draft of a sort of a detailed requirement and functional specification for the measurement systems. We're looking forward to distributing that as soon as I get a chance to clean up the user interface section, which I'm hopefully going to be able to turn to in the next few days. In addition to the document, the real focus now that we, I think, collectively as a group have a good idea of what the architecture is to develop a prototype that can be deployed and demonstrated in our research lab. The focus in that regard initially is on the data flows and protocols that enable an experiment to be specified and then instantiated on data gathering instruments. That exercise of building the early prototypes is underway. This includes an interface to a packet capture system that is also underway, and as I mentioned, our goal is to be able to demonstrate this at the next engineering conference. Okay, that concludes what I wanted to say.
All right, I'm gonna talk about our deliverables and my project in general in Spiral 1. The title is Data Plane Measurements. And we fit into the studies And we sort of look at all of the clusters, all of the prototypes to figure out what kind of physical layer measurements Genie can have on each prototype. These include embedded and external measurements. So I'm going to go into details of those. Our deliverables were, the first two were a review of all substrate technologies and embedded measurements, and we delivered them already. So I'm going to give a little bit of note on milestones and then go on with our next deliverable and sort of give you an overview of the external measurement deliverable so that I can get any input that you can provide. And these are some of the suggested thoughts on external measurements, basically. The first two deliverable was, they were based on the Spiral 1 substrate catalog that John Jacob was soliciting for prototype substrate technologies that you have. We used that document to prepare these two deliverables. So what did we mean by review of all substrate technologies? What we mean is we want to understand each prototype in terms of their actual hardware on their network. For example, cluster A has, I filled it in because I think they might not have any entry in the substrate catalog yet, but routers and computers. Max has a regional optical network with 10 gigabit per second, the DWDM optical nodes, Ethernet switches and computer servers. GP&E is another regional optical network. Enterprise Genie is some campus-wide programmable Ethernet switches. Planet Lab is all distributed. Varies, I guess, I should say. Or SPP overlay has high-performance overlay hosting nodes and NetFPGA cards. This list goes on like this. For cluster C, we have some network infrastructure again. The reason that we are looking at these, I don't want to go through all of them, is to understand exactly what kind of hardware exists on the prototype so that we can maybe propose external measurements that can be integrated later, or figure out what kind of embedded measurements this hardware has on them already that we can make use of in GIMS. And I will give some examples on each of these hardware that whatever we have found. So here are cluster D and cluster E. So they are not all optical, as you can see. There is also sensor networks with some wireless capability. What do I mean by embedded and external measurements? I just want to make it clear again. Embedded measurements are readily available at the multipurpose nodes. I decided to refer to the nodes as multipurpose nodes after this morning's presentation by Dave Clark. They can be network nodes or they can be other nodes, other boxes, because we are coming up with all sorts of different programmable nodes, basically. And these measurements might not be always transparent to users' needs. They might actually have some restricted API that the vendor has come up with. And you would have to have a computer that's connected to that node in order to access their available measurements. And I'm going to give an example on that, too. So in a sense, we don't have any direct access to the sensors that perform those measurements on the node. That's what I mean by not transparent, so non-transparent embedded measurements. External measurements, on the other hand, will depend on us, basically. Depending on the need assessment of every Genie control framework, we can actually suggest some external measurements to be included in those prototypes. And I will elaborate on that as well. So, example embedded measurements. For example, a Ciena box
will have bit error rates and optical power measurements or some protocol-specific performance monitoring already on the box. And that will be available through some Ethernet ports with remote connectivity or serial port for local access. And Sienna Box is available in GPNE prototype. But these measurements are not necessarily reconfigurable or programmable, and their interface to GIMS is not necessarily clear because they are all custom built for that box. Similarly, ADVA has different kinds of, again, measurements. Infinera Box has another kind of measurements. These are all optical boxes, optical cross-connect boxes. So they all have their own definitions of measurements, and their sampling rates are different. Their data representation is different. So I'm just trying to give you a sense of what kind of heterogeneous medium we have to access physical layer measurements when they are embedded. A further example of an embedded measurement exists on BAN. This is a Pilates 24-port fiber switch. I just wanted to showcase this one particularly because this box can monitor optical power on a per port basis. And it has Ethernet serial interface and GPIB, so we can access these optical power measurements easily. At the same time, this box has the capability of giving us a medium for measurement applications. Let's say we want to add other external measurement equipment on the node where this box is, we can actually do that and use this switch to switch between shared test equipment on that node. So let me go on with, this list goes on and on like this. I'm not gonna go over every one of them. I'm gonna post this anyway. So this is from our milestone deliverable. Embedded measurements on every cluster is listed based on whatever input we have gotten in the Spiral 1 substrate catalog. So we have delivered the review of all substrate technologies and documented the embedded measurement capabilities, but I want to just give a little note there. As more substrate input is delivered to the substrate work group, we will update these milestone documents. The future milestones, let me go through the external measurement equipment. So our goal is by the end of our project this summer, we want to suggest external measurement equipment for each prototype and also suggest a design concept on how to network these external measurement equipment so that GNE researchers can access them. Before I go on with the external measurements, I want to just give you some notes on the embedded ones. We all know that the control frameworks have been busy putting together their prototypes so that they can give a demo. In that sense, the list of embedded measurements that I provided, they're not actually implemented embedded measurements. They are just available on the hardware, but for example, their integration as measurement resources is not there. And I think maybe GIMS is gonna give the glue for them to include their embedded measurements into GNE platform. Also, a need assessment for embedded measurements has not been a priority because Spiral 1's goal wasn't there, maybe. I mean, so we are not sure which embedded measurements are gonna be used. This goes back to our discussion on what experiments do we wanna run on the GNE platform. Once we know what experiments we wanna run, then we know what kind of measurements those experiments will need. And in my opinion, the templates that Paul was referring to, can be a good start. Maybe at this point, once we identify a couple of experiments, we come up with some well-defined templates on just those experiments, just as a starting point, and then say, these are the measurements that these experiments would need. And that would actually feed into identifying what embedded measurements should be included. And another note is, most embedded measurements have been in the control plane, serving the needs of layer 2 and layer 3. So my interest is in layer 1. I haven't seen any control framework interested in layer 1 yet, except the Spiral 1 project with Dr. Bergman doing real-time measurements. So coming to external measurements, let's say we have wireless and optical media, and these are some of the spectrum analyzers, bit error rate test sets, and so on and so forth that I listed here. Of course, if we have infinite money, we would like to deploy all of these on all of the nodes and do as much measurement as we want, but of course we have limited resources. So this is just a sample list to sort of direct the discussion. But yes. Very expensive, yes. A 10 gig BERT would be 100K now. Yeah, a 40 gig would be 500K or something like that. Am I right?
Yeah.
I think so. Maybe, yeah, 250K, something like that. So it's in the order of hundreds, yeah. Exactly, yeah. So in a sense, I think we will have them sort of like islands of Gini will have those measurements capabilities, and people will run specific experiments on those Gini aggregates only if they need spectral analysis of whatever experiment they are running. So, yeah. But there is actually a catch, because in GIMS document, you have referred to sensors, right? We can boil these down to basic sensors and then answer the needs of some experiments with just sensors and a processing box. Because processing is everywhere. We have processing power everywhere. We only need a tap from the optical line, and then that sensor will, hopefully a high-performance sensor, which is going to cost in the order of 10 to 20K, and then do the processing. That's possible. So maybe that's going to be driven by Gini. So, well, when it comes to instruments, since we have limited resources, I wanted to concentrate on some of the desirable attributes that I need from an external measurement instrument. The two main concentrations that I have is, how do I network this instrument if I deploy on Gini? And the other one is, how do I reconfigure and program this instrument? Because that's what Gini is all about. Networking of instruments, of course, depend on the remote access mechanism of that instrument. Whatever the vendor puts on the instrument will be my limitation. Also, the flexible API. Maybe we can, if we're going to pay so much money to instrument vendors, maybe they will open up their API to us so that we can program them in any way we want and access the sensor data, actual sensor data, instead of their digested output. And also storage. Am I going to store the data on the instrument or not? So I'm going to go over these actually in detail. And reconfiguration and programmability is very, very important too, because I want to configure measurement parameters. Sometimes reprogram a measurement resource, because measurements are resources as well. And slice a measurement instrument, actually, for multiple user access. I have just four more. Is that okay? Okay. Remote access mechanisms are various, Ethernet, USB, and other, but maybe I can include a computer or server at each instrument site. Since I'm going to pay hundreds of thousands of dollars, I guess I can put a computer at the instrument site to access. But the interface to the instrument, I think, is the most challenging part because it needs to couple with the GDE control frameworks or with the GIMS aggregate manager. So I listed each control framework here, but after listening to Paul's presentation, maybe they will all interface only to GIMS. I mean, I think it's going to shape up as we go. And also storage. This goes to the documents that we were talking about, life cycle of a GDE experiment. During experiment execution, data collection analysis, is it going to happen on the instrument, on the network somewhere, local, or at researchers' access point? How is it going to be managed? That's another aspect of the networking. Reconfiguration, I want to make a distinction between reconfiguration and programmability of measurements, because reconfiguration is very similar to designing an experiment. When you're designing an experiment, you just sort of configure the nodes according to whatever novel protocol you're going to run. In the same way, measurement instruments are going to be configured according to what parameters are going to be measured, at which measurement resource, and what's granularity. Maybe one instrument will have a, no two instruments will have the same range of sampling rates for the same parameter. They will have different. So, for example, for the parameters, we can look at optical power per wavelength channel. Let's say this is being measured at the input of an Infinera DTN at U of H for the link between U of H and Rice University at a sampling frequency of 60 hertz. But I need to know that Infinera can go up to 100 hertz while I'm doing my experiment. So Infinera needs to talk to me back and say, hey, you can actually set up or configure your measurement so that you can sample this optical power at 100 hertz. I'm just giving an example. So programmability is a little different from reconfiguration because you might actually have local analysis done on the instrument or even on the embedded measurements. Because as we know with sensor networks, data fusion is a big deal. I think with GENI being this big experimental network, lots of instrumentation as well, we will need local analysis at some point. We don't want raw data to be sent to us all the time. Maybe we will need local analysis software running on the instruments before they report back to us. Maybe we can upload some custom measurement software to the instruments, reprogram them and do fancy things on the instrument and then make them report back to us. So, and program, I think under programmability aspect is the slicing of a measurement instrument, similar to a resource being sliced because multiple researchers should be able to log into this instrument and do measurements on their experiments. Last one. So one example I just wanted to give about you know all these desired attributes. Let's say an optical measurement instrument has on the left all the parameters that it can measure, and on the right I have their attributes. Network connection to the instrument can be dedicated line, or it can be in line with the data, which is not very desired, I think, according to GENI platform. It can have link-based measurements, but we need to come up with a basis for end-to-end so we can combine different slices on different control frameworks and do an end-to-end analysis. And if we do end-to-end, then we need to hop through different optical boxes in this case, and each one will have a different parameter, different interface. And then we need to configure update frequency of the measurements. How frequently are they gonna send us back data? Desired sampling rate, or if we wanna program some kind of event reporting, which goes back to taking this box as just a box, not a network node. Let's say we want to program some exotic analysis also, we would need to upload. So that's all I have. Any questions? No?
Okay. Thanks.
Anywhere. It's fine. Ooh, I guess it is on. Sorry, 1 second. It always picks the wrong screen on which to show the actual presentation. I do not know why. Oh, I get to use the fancy laser pointer. Ooh, all right. So I'm going to talk about a slightly different subject than the previous two speakers. This project is a collaboration between myself and Rudra Dutta and George Ruskas at North Carolina State. It was funded through the FIND program, and we're sort of in the last year of it. The purpose of talking about it is to introduce an idea of what a tool used by an experimenter in a slice might look like. So I have to give sort of a brief introduction that this idea really was not born of sort of the Gini concept. It was, in fact, born out of some vague sets of ideas that began as part of a optical burst switching project when we realized that the current networking stack as it exists today, the sort of ossified TCP/IP stack, really wasn't going to cut it when it came to new methods of transmission of data like optical burst switching. And the desire to sort of cut it into smaller pieces and have those come together in desirable configurations based on the type of transport, the underlying transport you were using, which in itself is not a terribly novel idea. The novelty really stemmed from some of the enhancements we introduced into it, and which I will talk about now. So what I will do is I will introduce the concept of silo framework, and then in a few slides at the end, I will talk about how I see this framework becoming a tool for a researcher in Gini. And let me start the clock. From a high level, if we look at what Silo offers, is on the left we have sort of the traditional networking stack. You have your transport layer, network layer, link layer, physical layer, and applications really all come into your transport layers. Silo offers an opportunity to essentially customize your stack per application, is what you're seeing here. These are all small services that are, small data transformations that are reusable. That's one important fact. And they're built and arranged in this order specifically, you know, according to the needs of this application. So in fact, every one of these could be unique. The important thing is, you know, we have a silo management service, which is actor or whatever you want to call it, entity, that assembles these on demand based from application requests. And the other thing, this is really the novelty that we introduced, was this explicit ability to do cross-layer tuning. Each service exposes well-defined knobs and gauges, which a separate object called a tuning algorithm can come in and tune based on application optimization request or based on system optimization and or based on network optimization goals, basically all of the above. And so really this framework is what we're thinking about a potential tool to be used by a Genie researcher, because the idea is that instead of diving into this code and trying to sort of extract the parts you don't need and substitute the parts that you do, now you have this reusable library of services where you only create code for a few of them, the ones that you're actually interested in, and then reuse the ones that are already there. And you have the freedom to arrange them in any which way you want. So architecturally, a silo framework looks sort of like this. You have what we call a universe of services. And in a minute, I will talk about sort of a service method separation. So a service is sort of a generic way to identify a specific type of data transformation. And the method is a specific implementation of that concept. So for instance, for FEC, you can have Reed Solomon and others' implementations. Forward error correction is a service, and then Reed Solomon is a method. We have a control agent that essentially, this is somewhat older terminology. We have an agent that can take these out of the universe and, based on the application request, arrange them into this silo with a lowercase s. We call these arrangements silos. So the framework is called silo with all caps, and then these little vertical arrangements of services are called silos, all lowercase. And then you have an accumulation of policies and strategies that A, allow you to build them, these silos, and B, allow you to control them in a cross-layer fashion. So, you know, essentially algorithms that can touch these knobs and look at the gauges and touch those knobs to optimize the behavior of a silo in a certain way. So a service method paradigm is essentially, I tried to explain with this picture. So a service is this sort of this bracket that defines the behavior of a method, and it has two interfaces, preceding service and succeeding service, and so a method has to comply here. And then it has service-specific control interface, which is essentially exposed by any method implementing the service. And there's also space for method-specific control. So when a tuning agent comes from this side, it can either try to tune these generic controls, or if it's sophisticated enough, it can try to tune the method-specific controls. We have a prototype, which is all user space for now. Just for simplicity, we really didn't want to deal with the vagaries of kernel development, although the end goal is to deploy this into the kernel. So it's a mixture of C++ and Python. The Python we use for processing the ontology, which I haven't mentioned yet. Basically, so you have the application, and there's the API through which it can actually talk to the framework. There's a silo management agent, which maintains the state of individual silos. There's a storage for control strategies, which are all DLLs, and so are the methods. They're all DLLs that can be dynamically linked into the system based on the application requests. And then there's an agent, silo tuning agent, which is a container for tuning strategies. So again, tuning strategies are DLLs that can be loaded and instantiated as part of a tuning agent to control specific silos. So the way we create the arrangements of silos, obviously, you know, they all have dependencies between themselves. So if you look at sort of a standard TCP/IP stack, you have to have TCP, and then you have to have IP, right? So there's a precedence relationship there. So we have an ontology that describes this, these relationships between services. And so as an implementer, if you're writing a new service or a new method, you, in addition to implementing this method and or service interface, you augment the existing ontology with whatever restrictions you feel need to be imposed on that service, so that when our automated agent, the silo construction agent or silo composition agent, goes in and creates a silo based on application request. It can use precedence constraints and other types of constraints. Precedence is really the simplest case of it, to actually construct a silo based on application request. And so the requests themselves are also mini ontologies, and they're fuzzy. So you can say, I need datagram-like service. And the construction agent will fill in, you know, it will put in the UDP service as your datagram service, or UDP-like service as a datagram service, and then we'll pull in something that looks like an IP service and something that looks like a routing service so that you can actually forward the packets in the proper place, et cetera, et cetera. So in other words, based on these constraints, you can actually create a complete silo, but the application writer doesn't have to worry about all of those. All it needs to say is, I need a datagram service. And of course, this goes deeper. I mean, I'm just giving sort of the simplest examples possible. So an ontology, this is a fraction of an ontology. We started by essentially re-implementing pieces of the existing TCP/IP stack just to show that we could do it in a different fashion. So our ontology and our silo universe of services really looks like a partial implementation of a TCP/IP stack with the constraints that you're sort of accustomed to if you're working with TCP/IP. So, for instance, the TCP congestion control service is of type pacing. We have a type pacing for services. Has function congestion control, and there are two precedence constraints on it. It can only be below a TCP segmentation, and it has to be below TCP handshake. This is what really this piece of ontology shows you. And so our schema for the ontology looks sort of like this. We have primitives, which are methods and services. The constraints, as you can see, sort of the biggest tree. So we can have primitive constraints and functional constraints. This is sort of the unfulfilled part of the tree. We're still working on that. But basically, this is the fuzzy part of a specification. I want a specific function in my silo. I don't actually know what service implements it. I just know I need a function. And then there are primitive constraints, which really are more concrete and based on specific primitives. And you can have simple and compound constraints. So you basically say and or above and or below and or requires, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So again, this wasn't initially meant, this was meant as a generic framework on which to build a future internet because this was funded through FIND. It was also meant potentially as a way to revive the field of protocol research because it's, in our opinion, it sort of became ossified due to the sheer complexity of wrapping your brains around the current implementations of TCP/IP stacks available in the kernels, even if they are open source. And just making this process much more simplified and much more flexible. And so, you know, in our view, the hourglass became not IP, but in our view, the silo framework became the hourglass through which you saw the network. But so if you were a researcher in Genie and you wanted to play with protocol research, how would you do it using this framework? Well, seems like you would bring some sort of custom services with you, whatever you need to implement, whatever it is you're playing with. Some tuning algorithms that talk to your service and perhaps other services within a silo, and ontology updates which allow sort of intelligent construction of these lowercase silos for applications that include your new service and perhaps some of the existing services. Again, the point is reuse. You don't want to have everyone re-implement the entire network stacks. What you want to do is allow a researcher to implement just the parts they're really interested in playing with. And I have some examples following. And the important thing is, and Denise just talked about this, so if there is a measurement framework available, and Paul talked about it as well, if there's a measurement framework available within Genie, then you can implement services that actually either expose knobs to this framework so that you can take measurements off of them, or you can have tuning algorithms that take those measurements in as part of their input, right? Now you can optimize the behavior of a silo based on all that information. So what we show here is the experimenter sitting behind what probably is more like a slice controller and deploying cross-layer experimentation tools into the substrate over here. And this is a borrowed picture, so ignore some of these arrows. So, but you have an integrated measurement framework in the middle here that sort of mediates some of this to allow for cross-layer experimentation, which is really what the crux of this is. It's the cross layer is the key piece. So how about a couple of examples? So a wireless example, adaptive transport. Let's say you want to design a set of services and some cross-layer tuning algorithm or algorithms, plural, to maximize goodput across a wireless network. So you will implement some FEC service with some knobs that allow you, for instance, to change the length of the FEC. You implement an adaptive MTU service so you can shrink and grow your MTU depending on some input. And then, and maybe an adaptive window management service for, you know, if it's sort of like a stream-oriented protocol that you're working with. And then you have a tuning algorithm that manages all those knobs based on the state of based on the input from the radios, based on sort of the readings from the substrate, so you can maximize the good put from application to application. Another example, impairment-aware routing in an optical network. So maybe you want to design an optical impairment-aware routing protocol that maximizes network utilization. So you have in substrate distributed impairment measurement capabilities, for instance, PMD. And then you implement a routing service, which really is, as we know, we're not seeking to replace routing algorithms, but maybe it's a stub inside the silo that takes in some measurements and switches between different routing approaches depending on what type of impairments you're seeing in the network. All right, so it's, you know, it's a valid experiment in my view. So what would we need from Genie in this case to enable something like this? Well, so you would need silo infrastructure deployed into the slice, both in the edges and in the core. And the caveat right now is that so far we really have been concentrating on the edge, although we've never excluded the possibility of deploying silos in the core of the network. You'd need the silo universe, which is sort of the collection of implementations of services like, you know, dynamically linkable code, the ontology, and, you know, tuning algorithms, collection of tuning algorithms, so you can use some of the existing infrastructure, so you don't have to recode the whole thing just to test one idea. You need the ability to include custom written services, ontology updates, and tuning algorithms, so that needs to be done through a slice manager, one way or the other. You need to be able to introduce those into the slice. And then, so we call a recipe, sort of this snuck in, I wasn't paying attention. So a recipe is something that a silo construction agent gives to the framework to say, here's a recipe for the silo, construct this please. So it's already figured out what the order of services needs to be and what they need to be for this application. And you know, it's basically an XML document that tells you what the inclusive services are in that silo. And then, you know, there needs to be an interface with the measurement framework if there is one present, so that you can write services that take it and tuning algorithms that take advantage of those measurements, so that you can optimize the behavior of silos to some goal that you consider important. And then you have to preserve a lot of this information, like slice recipes, for core and edge. We actually presume that most of the silo creation is automated, right, by the construction edge, so you may actually not know what your silo might look like in the end. And so if you were looking for repeatability, obviously you need to save the state of those silos and the silo recipes when you deploy it into the slice so that the experiment becomes repeatable. That's it. That's my last slide. Oh, you had to ask that question. It's So right now it's ensured from the fact that the ontology is the same on both ends. So if you have a server and client, and they have sort of compatible requests, they will get same server side or client side silos. But it is a difficult question. We actually have postulated an existence of a control channel between these silo management agents to ensure some of that. But yeah, please. Mm-hmm. I think superficially at least, to me this seems like, I mean, this is something that at the edge you would deploy into VMs, and in the core you would deploy into some sort of programmable router substrate. So it would have to come from the fact of, you know, being, you know, some parts of the substrate have to be declaratively compatible with this. So you can say, yes, you can actually deploy this into them so you can play with them. I don't know, does that make sense? Right. And then, you know, in our idealized view, I mean, this is such a great idea. Why wouldn't Cisco pick this up and put this in their routers, right? But, you know, that's just in my, you know, in my dreams. So you said you had a bunch more questions.
I'll wait.
Okay. Yeah, I guess I'm standing between everyone and dinner, so it's not a good place to be.